Okay, thank you. Thank you for coming, and also thank you for the organizing committee, Peter Song, and other committee members inviting me. And I see some familiar face there, and some people come from Waterloo. It's very nice to see all you people. Okay, this is joint work with two of my students. One's a current student, Peng Wong, and he will join Bowling Green State University this fall. And another student, former student, Cindy Tai, and he's in Taiwan now, working for Drug Evaluation Center. So we first start with a motivating example. And so here, the longitudinal. So this is a longitudinal observational study. And the dental data, the periodontal dental data. And we're really interested in non-surgical treatment, periodontal treatment, effect on the tooth loss. So the outcome is a binary indicator whether the person lost their teeth or not. So there are about 722 subjects, and they are followed over 7 years. Okay. So there are many covariates we're interested in, gender, age, and also many variables to measure the teeth condition, the health teeth health condition. Now here, the unique part is like the each subject, okay, so quite different. So you can see this graph, that if you do the residual plot against the over the year, the trajectory is actually quite different, varying from patient to patient. Okay, so in this model, we want to incorporate the random effects for this longitudinal data, in addition to incorporate the theory correlation. Okay. So there are two major approaches for correlate data. One's a marginal model, another one is a mixed effects model. Looks like several speakers talk about the mixed effects model. Also, Shi Hong gave a talk is related to mixed effects model. Okay, so I will give some brief introduction of each pro and cons for these two approaches. So for the marginal model, if you're really just interested in the population average, you want to draw the inference population average, then this is a good approach because it's relatively simple. And there are several major approaches for the marginal model. For example, the most well-known, the generalized estimating equation approach, and also the quadratic inference function. So the advantage can be summarized as following, that really especially if you're dealing with a non-normal outcome, that actually we don't need to specify the likelihood function, okay? And also, it is a still consistent estimator if the correlation structure is misspecified. So this is a very nice feature. And if the working, if the correlation structure is correct to specify, it also leads to efficient estimator, okay? And also, in addition, provides a robust sandwich variance estimator for the regression parameter. And the mixed model is a little bit different, that if you're really interested, if there's a heterogeneity variation among subjects, so just like the previous graph, that if you see the trajectory for different patients quite differently, then it might be better to fit the mixed effects model, okay? And one advantage that actually we're able to incorporate several correlations. One's random effects, and this random effect introduces correlation, and also you can introduce additional theory correlation related to time, okay? And so the limitation is that, so the typical existing approach for the mixed effects model requires a parametric assumption for the random effects. So this actually, so far, I think the most, the fatal flaw, that for whatever convenience, computational feasibility, people just assume the random effects follow some parametric assumption. And typically, it requires a normality assumption, okay? And if the outcome is non-normal, and you still want to incorporate the theory correlation, then it typically involves high-dimensional integration, okay? Because the mixed effects, typically, you want to involve some degree of the specification of likelihood function. So there are some existing literature, very well-known, penalized quasi-likelihood, by earliest Breslow and Clayton, and also hierarchical generalized linear model. There's sequence paper by Lee and Nelder, and also conditional likelihood by Jimmy Jiang, 1999's Annals paper. And also 2002 by Von Esch et al. The conditional second degree generalized estimating equation, which also combines a second order generalized estimating equation to dealing with the Rennie-Fetz model. Now, for the PQL and also second order GE typically requires this normality assumption for Rennie-Fetz. Okay? And later on we'll show the example, the simulation that if we have bimodal distribution for the Rennie-Fetz, then this actually does not work well. And also for PQL and a conditional second order GE, it also requires the estimation of variance components. Okay, so it's an additional calculation here. And for PQL hierarchical generalized linear model and a conditional likelihood, they actually do not incorporate serial correlation. So basically, they just assume the random effect induced the correlation. So there's no additional serial correlation involved here. So the proposed approach, so here we use the conditional quadratic inference function. And the major advantage that we really do not require any distribution assumption for random effects. Basically, we treat the random effects as a parameter. So eventually, it involves the high-dimensional random effects parameter estimation. Okay. And also, we do not require the likelihood function. This is an advantage, like all the estimating function approach, that you don't need to specify the likelihood function. Okay. And we are able to accommodate variation from both random effects and a serial correlation. Okay. In addition, we do not require the estimation of a variance components and also correlation parameter. Okay. The challenge part, so this is a high dimensional workshop, right? So where's the high dimensional part? So we'll show you the dimensional Rennie-Fetz parameter actually increase as the sample size increases. Basically, it's the same dimension of sample size because each subject, if we allow there's a Rennie-Fetz, actually the dimensional Rennie-Fetz could be more than the sample size, okay? If you have a random intercept, random slope, and each count as a parameter, so actually it could exceed the sample size. So we will first give you the notation introduction that y is a response variable, and the mu is the mean of the response variable, and a is a diagonal marginal variance, and R is a working correlation. And this is a formulation of a generalized estimating equation. So you see that basically you do not require specified likelihood function, just solve the equation and you get a fixed parameter estimator. So we want to talk about how can we handle the serial correlation without estimating correlation parameter. So if we're able to approximate the inverse of a correlation by a linear representation of a basis matrices, and this basis matrices has some kind of simple form like either 0 or 1 components, you could also consider that if you have empirical structure, you can get like a spectral decomposition of the correlation matrix. You can pick the first several decomposition components. Okay. So this linear representation actually is quite flexible and is able to accommodate working correlation structure such as AR1 exchangeable or even block diagonal or other structure or the mixture of all this structure. Okay. So the first equation is a GE, and if you replace inverse of R, you formulate the GE estimating function. And notice the G estimating function is a linear combination of the extended score. Now notice each moment condition actually tells you some information related to the correlation. Okay. So if that means if we can decompose the correlation matrix by several basis matrices, each moment condition gives you part of it. Okay. Now, if you look at this extended score, now you actually have more moment conditions than number parameters. Okay. So it's different from a typical estimating equation that you just solve the equation, get the parameter estimating. Here, you actually need to do the linear combination. So basically, try to estimate the parameter by minimizing some distance function, which this distance function actually is weighted by the variance for this G function. Okay. So if the component of G function has a large variance, you will give a smaller weight. The advantage of doing this, actually, this beta hat is more efficient than GE estimator under the misspecified correlation structure. And in addition, because like in typical estimating function, you do not have objective function, this actually, this the distance function is analog to minus twice log likelihood. So it can also serve the objective function similar to the minus twice log likelihood. So therefore, we can use it for model checking and testing, serve the inference function purpose. So here's a framework of the mixed effects model that conditional random effects B, this is a notation that expectation Y is some function of the linear some mu could be nonlinear function, okay, so the inverse of link function. And inside, you have the typical covariate part, which is x beta, and also random effects part. So z is associated with the random effects, and bi is a parameter associated with the random effects. Okay. So here, b is a random effects parameter. Actually, this b actually not exactly the same dimension as the sample size, because here, if you just have one random effect for associated with the one covariate, then the same dimension. But suppose you have a random intercept, several random slope, you actually have a multiple of the sample size. So here the parameter random effects could exceed the sample size. So let's look at the penalized conditional quasi-likelihood. Probably some of you are quite familiar that this is a summation of the deviance function. Okay. So you formulate the di is your deviance function, and so if you don't have exact likelihood, you can still formulate this conditional quasi-likelihood function given the random effects parameter b. Okay. Now here, because the random effects parameter p doesn't require to follow the distribution assumption, so you actually need some constraint to ensure the identifiability. Otherwise, you have the identifiability problem, you cannot get unique solution. And this is typical, the constraint people will use, it's a PA times B equal to zero, and PA is a projection matrix on the null space, and the null space is actually the Z minus the PXZ. So it's kind of like, it's still in the space of Z, but minus the overlapped with the covariate X. So this is a formulation of penalized conditional quasi-likelihood by Jiang's 1999 paper. So the first part of the function is a penalized, first is a quasi-likelihood function. Okay. The second part is a penalization part. So try to make the constraint work. Jiang proposed to choose a lambda equal to 1. So here lambda is fixed in Jiang's approach. Okay. And actually, in this Annals paper, there's no numerical results there. So eventually, we programmed this conditional likelihood, quasi-likelihood approach, and we eventually find out this approach actually does not converge. And we'll tell you why this approach actually does not converge a little bit later. So if you look at this, the previous, the LQ, and if we take the derivative, okay, corresponding to the fixed effects parameter beta and the random effects parameter b, then we get a two sets of equations. The first one is corresponding to beta, okay? So this is the first part. So this is the first part. And second part is taking the derivative of the LQ with respect to the random effects parameter b. So this is the penalization part, which involves the constraint. Now, for the Jiang's approach, because there's no theory correlation is incorporated. So if you want to incorporate theory correlation, you actually assume this W matrix. This W matrix is not a diagonal independent matrix. Actually, it has some correlation information comes from the theory correlation. So this is what we formulate, that we have a several moment condition involved some information of a correlation. And so therefore, if we know the random effects parameter B, we can minimize this quadratic inference function. Okay. So this is the same idea. Okay. So if we know the random effects parameter B. So the question is, how can we get a running fast parameter B estimation? So this comes from this set of equations. So remember, different subjects, okay, different subjects has a different parameter, okay. So this involves this BI. So this BI only associate with this particular subject I, okay. So this BI, you cannot get a common information from different subjects, just from this I subject, okay. Now, because there's no replicates from to get a common information BI, so here we're just using very simple correlation structure R when you try to solve the random facts part. So we assume R is just independent, and we get this, okay. So this is the extended score. We are able to construct that you have two pieces. This is the first associate with the mu I part. The second is associated with the penalization part. Okay. Now, just give you a simple illustration that if you have a random intercept model, this derivative penalty part, it's a very simple, just summation of BI divided, just average of this. So we assume we have this constraint that this is equal to zero. Okay, so why this approach doesn't converge? Actually, they only consider the constraint. Just think about it, that if your dimension is really, really high, okay, and you just have this one constraint, certainly it's not enough, because you could have high variation for different random effect parameters. You still get this constraint, but it's likely that the algorithm will not converge. Okay, so just using this is not sufficient. Now, we actually showed that this convergence problem becomes more serious when you have a high-dimensional random effects parameter involved, okay? So here, we actually introduce additional penalty term, which we call this lambda bi, which we also try to control the variance. Okay, that makes sense, that you actually don't want the variance of the random effects too huge, okay? Even this constraint is satisfied, it not necessarily get a converging result. So therefore, the new extended score is constructed this way. Okay. So this is the original extended score. Then we also add this penalty part to control the variance. Then we estimate the B based on minimization of this Euclidean distance. Okay. Now here, we do not have a weight here because there's no replicate for each particular subject. So I will give you the regularity condition associated with this theoretical development. Now, if you look at this regularity condition, all this previous 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it's very standard, okay? So basically, it's a standard requirement for almost every theoretical property to hold. And here, the really different one is this one. So we require this double expectation of a G function conditional on B hat converges to zero in probability. Now, we actually show in the paper this condition is much weaker than the consistency for the random effects estimator. So if you look at most of the literature, in order to show the consistency of the fixed effect parameter estimator, they always require this random effects estimator has to be consistent. But this condition actually a lot stronger than this condition, and we provide some several counterexamples to show this is weaker. So here's the asymptotic property that all these regularity conditions satisfy, and the sample size goes to infinity. This is typical root n consistency and asymptotic normality. And in the derivation of the theory, there are two difficulties arise that we do not assume normality, okay? So once you have a normality, a lot seems a lot easier to prove. Also, we do not require this B hat has to be consistent estimated for the true B. Now, suppose you do have the consistency of the random effects, okay? Then you have additional bargain that your variance of beta 1 hat has this explicit form, which is inverse of this Q function, the quadratic inference function second derivative. So this is an iterative algorithm that you can start with any initial estimator beta hat. And given beta hat, we try to estimate the random effects parameter B hat, okay, by minimizing this Euclidean distance. And once we have the updated B hat, we minimize this quadratic inference function, get this B hat, beta hat. So we try the Jiang's approach that we try the giving the different initial value, the Jiang's approach will give us, each time give a different initial value, then the results are different. So they show the indication that the algorithm doesn't converge. Okay. But here you can input any initial value and give you consistent result. Now for the tuning parameter lambda, so lambda here you control the variance and also the constraint, and we propose obtain this lambda by minimizing this BIC type of criteria. Okay. So the first part just involves the fixed effects, quadratic inference function. The second part is related to the constraint for the random effects parameter. Okay. So we call the BIC type because it's not really like a function, but it also has a similar BIC type of criteria that here use a log n. So I will show you the, some numerical results that we have sample size of 100, and cluster size can be varied, either 4 or 5. So this is unbalanced data. So half of the data is 4, half of the data has a cluster size 5. And here we have a binary outcome, and this is the logistic regression that here we have a random intercept and also random slope. And the true correlation, okay, so this is a true correlation, is either independent, exchangeable, or AR1. So in these three different correlation structure. And correlation we set up 0.7. Now, this random effects, we don't simulate a normal distribution. We simulate this from bimodal distribution, and it's a rescaled beta distribution. And we compare the proposed approach to the PK or penalized quasi-likelihood and a SAS-Glean mix and also the nonlinear mix approach and see what we get here. Now, this is a true structure that you have independent exchangeable AR1, and clearly you see this here, I highlight the red one, that when the correlation structure is correctly specified, the proposed approach is doing a lot better compared under the misspecified independent, also misspecified here, misspecified AR1, and misspecified exchangeable. So this true one's AR1. If you assume the AR1, you get this mean square error a lot smaller than this. Now, this is a PQL mean square error, okay? So we just use existing software to calculate the PQL. And for SAS, Glean mix and nonlinear mix, and surprisingly, we find a high percentage of non-convergence. So this upscript indicates among 200 simulations, how many of them are non-convergence. So for example, this one has 173 simulation results actually not converge. We just pick the convergent result, calculate the mean square error. Okay. So you notice that actually has a high rate of non-convergence for either independent, exchangeable AR1. Also non-linear mix is not too bad, have about 7 out of 200 times non-convergent. Okay. So this is for the fixed parameter beta 0 estimator. And for beta 1, the results quite similar, that you see that under the correct specification, the proposed approach is always the best, okay? And still, this is we have this non-converging result for the, so I would say PK still has some advantage. It's always converged, okay? So the Glean mix, nonlinear mix, has some pretty serious non-convergence result. So we also plot the estimated random effects. Remember, we treat it as a parameter, okay? So it's no distribution assumption, but we estimate each parameter. So this is a histogram show what we estimate. It's a bimodal. Very clearly, it's a bimodal. This is a true distribution. Now, you notice it because the beta is has this boundary, right? So once you set up the range of beta, there's nothing here, nothing there. But when you estimate the parameter, of course, you see more like a gradual decreasing here, gradual decreasing here. But still clearly that you show that it's a two bimodal, the bimodal random effect parameter estimation here. So clearly it's not unimodal symmetric distribution. So I come up with the last binary data example, the dental data. So for this dental data, it's also unbalanced data. About 77% of patients have at least 5 years of follow-up. Okay. So it's a binary response tooth loss. And we applied the random intercept model. And we actually can check the model assumption by applying some chi-square goodness fit test to check whether it's a random intercept or random slope model is sufficient. So this is additional covariates that you have a gender age, and this is many variables measuring the health condition of teeth. So for example, the number of teeth. So clearly if someone has a little number of teeth, it's an indication poor dental health. And also the number of disease sites and the mean pocket of depth. So someone's pocket depth is very deep, this indication poor health condition. And also the treatment, non-surgical treatment, and also the surgical treatment over the 3-year baseline. And also some preventive procedure. Okay. So this is the logistic model we have here. And here I just list all the different approaches for the PKL, GLEAN-MIX independent. The exchangeable doesn't converge, so we didn't list it here. Nonlinear mix only independent works, so we just listed. So you clearly see that there's in general, the standard error for the proposed approach is smaller than the penalized quasi-likelihood. Okay, and the GLEAN mix sometimes has a smaller standard error, sometimes has a larger standard error. So the red part I highlight, this Z value is significant for the GLEAN mix independent AR1, but not significant for other approaches. And we see that pocket depths actually contribute the tooth loss. Okay, this is a positive sign. And in our approach, the exchangeable approach shows the significant, but for other approaches, it's not significant. And also for the pocket depths for all sites. Okay, and if you look at non-surgical, this shows a negative sign. That means doing the non-surgical periodontal treatment prevents the tooth loss. You have the negative sign there, although it's not significant. Okay, so this is a standard error, and the standard error for the proposed approach is slightly better than the other approaches here. So I come to some discussion. So summarize that the advantage that if typical random effects is just only able to incorporate the random variation, random effects variation, we actually incorporate both variation, one theory, temporal theory correlation, in addition to the heterogeneous variation from individual. Okay. And I think the biggest plus is distribution assumption for random effects, it's not required. And we also do not specify the likelihood function. And we do not need to estimate the variance components or the nuisance parameter associated with the correlation. And theoretically, it provides the consistent and asymptotic normality for the fixed effect estimator. And notice that the dimension of the random effects parameter could exceed the sample size. Okay. And numerical will actually show this in general outperform the other competitive approach, especially when the data is have a binary outcome. And computationally, I want to mention that even although it involves the high-dimensional random effects parameter estimation, because we penalize the variance part, okay? If you don't control the variance, your computation could be very, very slow or non-convergent. But here, if we control the variance part, computationally, it is quite fast, okay? And also, we notice that GLEAN-MIX procedure tend to have this convergence problem issue. So thank you for your attention, and so that's the end of my talk.